And that's one of the point of our singing together, is to teach one another through song. And so it was neat to learn some of those things again. It's also fun to be able to speak for you tonight, new enough where I can still kind of think of it as like it's a guest speaker. And so hopefully some of the kind of the old that comes from having been a preacher a long time isn't here yet. So we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about my assignment for tonight. And to start us off with that, I want to ask you a riddle, or put a riddle to you. Until I am measured, I am not known. Yet how you miss me when I've flown, what am I? And the answer is time. It's a pretty straightforward riddle, I think. And it's very easy, but poignant is what I mean to say. And that, sure enough, when you start counting out the time and looking at the seconds click by, things seem to start moving pretty slow until you, of course, do something that's fun, and then, my, how time flies, right, is what we say. And so time is the answer to that riddle, but more specifically what we're going to talk about tonight is how quickly the time flows that is your share of it, and how much our time goes away whether we like it or not. If you want to turn your Bibles over to Psalm 90, we're going to start reading there here in a little bit, Psalm 90. But what we're going to be talking about tonight is our time share. I have heard that Roger is very good at making titles that stick in your brain. And if I'm not mistaken, this is Roger's creation. And I was asking, what do you mean by this? I'm assuming you don't mean vacation rentals or different things like that. And he was explaining some of what he was hoping to see. And sure enough, I cannot get this title out of my brain anymore. And so hopefully it's useful for you and you'll remember it as we go through the week. What I'd like us to remember about our timeshare to start off with is that time is finite. And if time is finite, like any other thing that is has a limited amount, it's valuable. And even though it's not an object or a thing that you can buy, it is and does have value. And you know this. You have probably even used language to this effect, like time is money. You've heard that before. Or maybe you've asked the question, is this worth my time? We're using currency language for something you can't touch or see, but something that goes by nonetheless. Even like, was it last Wednesday night's lesson about spending time with the family, spending time? We think of time as a currency because it's finite and it's valuable. And so the share of time that's allotted to you is also dangerously finite. And so it's important then that we understand and know the value of time, how valuable it really is, just like the market, what will hold for any other commodity or item. And we must then be wise with our use of it. If it's finite, there's only so much to go around. We need to be discerning about that. And then most of all, most importantly of all, we need to put God first with how we use our time or spend our time, as we'll be using kind of currency language from here on out. In other words, what we need to do is we need to work down from what we value to how we live. And I want to use that a couple of times as we go through here. In fact, I want to give you something tonight. And can I, Taylor and Christian, can I have you help me out real quick and just pass these around to everybody? And just one for each person. And we'll get these out to everybody. And hopefully this will be useful for you too and help you think about this lesson as we go through the rest of this week. Again, I want to reiterate this. Spending our time share is about working down from what we value most and using that for how we live, not the other way around. And you're going to see that as we go through our lesson this evening. So you can get this piece of paper and kind of hang on to it, but you don't have to look at it right now. We'll get to that, and I'll kind of explain some of the details of it as we go. But I figure we get it out here first. All right, so let's go ahead and talk about our first idea here about using time. And if time is a currency, if time is finite and is thought of something that is valuable, then just like anything else that's valuable, we're going to plan how to spend it. Or if it's your money, we would say budget that out. All that is planning out the future of your currency, just the same as we would do with our time. And so I use this phrase a lot when I'm talking with folks about a time budget. I've only got so much in my time bank account, and so I can't just spend this any way that I want to. I'm not independently wealthy on time, and so I need to be able to use that well and prudently. So this morning, in fact, I sat down and I did two things which were helpful and useful to this. The first is I went through my phone and I deleted every unnecessary app that typically presents a notification to me and distracts me from things that are going on. I just got rid of all of those, and I'm going to try going without those for a month and see what happens, and then hopefully that will be a future way of living. But then the other thing that I did was, with all that spare time, I sat down and I planned out a potential teaching schedule for the rest of this year, which Jay and Roger will talk with you more as we go through that. So the idea here then is, I sat down this morning and I got rid of distractions and I tried to plan out the use of my valuable currency of the time that I have, as far as I know. So if time is like any other currency, it ought to be budgeted. And I want to show you a budget here real quick. Maybe you've seen something like this or heard this before, that during your week, every week, we all have... Isn't this interesting, is that there's rich people and there's poor people, but you and I all are equalized by the same amount of time we have in our time bank account. And all we have is 168 hours. And there's nobody in this room that has more than that or less than that. And so it's a blessing and it's also a curse. And if you kind of think about your week, which I'm sure you may have at some point, especially if you're keeping appointments and you're keeping a record of all these different things, maybe you've got your phone alarms you to where you need to be at certain times, well, then you know that you've got about 49 hours of sleep every week. That's 7 hours sleep, and so that's kind of shaven off a little bit. You'll see why here in just a second. Most people say that adults need around 7 to 8 hours of sleep, so I figured, well, let's kind of save on that a little bit and do 7 hours and call that good. And maybe you sleep less than that, maybe you sleep more, but that's kind of the general idea. Most people work 40 hours a week, and so if you've got a typical job, that's yours, but maybe you are a salary worker, and so you get called in all the time, and so you might have more than this, or maybe you're a part-time worker while going to school, and so maybe you have less than this, but it's a general idea. 40 hours of work a week. I've noticed in this area that traffic is pretty interesting, and so so I gave us a commute time for the whole week of 7 hours. And I figured that's probably generous for some of you, depending on if you're going into the city or not. And so if you think, you know, 5 work days and however many ways you can split that 7 hours into that, maybe that covers your commute, maybe not. That leaves us with 71.5 waking hours to do stuff. And isn't that amazing? But wait, David, I got to brush my teeth and stuff. So then there's 31.5 hours is the average American's usage of what it takes to shower, brush teeth, eat, different things that the internet called this, and Roger had supplied me with this, which was fantastic. It was an infograph of all the ways that people generally use time in the United States, and the average American spends 31.5 hours with personal care. And so again, that's showering, brushing teeth, and so on. And so our spare time is becoming more and more finite. After this, I figured, hey, let's do 4 hours a week of shopping. That includes grocery shopping and clothes shopping and, you know, household items shopping, all this different stuff. And that's technically travel time to get there. And last time I was at Costco, I don't know if I could fit this in here. So, again, I'm being kind of generous or maybe stingy if we look at it this way with our time. And that leaves us with one other big section that most Americans take a lot of advantage of, and that's recreation, which takes up about 35 hours a week for the average American for recreation. So that's family time, that's going out to the lake, just anything that you think is fun. That's your hobby, whatever. And so do you see that little? I'm going to use the laser here. Do you see that little sliver right there? Okay, you maybe have more things going on in your week than this. Maybe you have less things than this. But what that is, I tried to represent. It's not scale. That's 1 hour. Left, one waking hour left after all this other time has been spent. Is that God's time? Is that where we leave him? All the way at the end? No, honestly, no wonder why it's hard to get to worship if there's only 1 hour that's left, if we think of it this way. No wonder. Time, like any other currency, needs to be budgeted, and brethren, that's not acceptable. But if you're living a schedule like this and you're looking at it, you're saying, I can't change this. This is just like basic necessity stuff. Now, I will, kind of argue that there's other things that we can do with our recreation time. We can do a lot of different things, different than the average American does. But with a lot of this other stuff, and especially if you got young kids, you know that some of these others start, blowing up out of proportions, and it seems like you don't have any time at all. So what do we do with this? Well, let's go ahead and kind of talk about budgeting still. We need to budget our time and budget it better, be wise about it, so that we won't lose track of it. Now, some of you might be familiar with Dave Ramsey's stuff and talking about how, budgeting your money so you don't lose track of that. Well, hey, let's do that with time. And let's take an assessment of how much time we spend on different things. And that's what that little paper in front of you is for, which we'll get to here in just a little bit. But if we plan things out, and let's fix all of this. We plan it out with God as our center, as our focus, as the starting place for our budget. Well, then, brethren, you and I aren't going to have to worry about 168 hours a week anymore. You and I will have eternity to spend. And so if you and I put God as our budget, well, then we're planning well. He's the focus of our budget. And if we don't plan, then the world's going to run our lives. And you know what that sounds like? It sounds like I'm busy. That's the world running my life. And so if we take our lives back from the world, and if we kind of use almost a clinical term, we optimize and free ourselves from the busy, here's another thing that happens. Maybe you're really good at this. Maybe you're really good at shaving down some of this time and taking advantage of different things. Maybe you do work on the BART to get into work, and so you're able to shave down some of that work time. The next question is, what do we use to fill the void with? A lot of folks will shave down and optimize their time to fill it with more recreation, but what are we doing with that? So a couple of things to think of as we get ready to go through our lesson, and this is where the scripture comes in. Let's go to Psalm 90 and verses 1 through 4 to begin with. We'll move through this the length of this psalm. But the thing to understand here, and especially if you're thinking, you know, let's say that we're talking about kind of a secular way of living, is that I need to shave down time so I can live my best life now, or whatever, you know, we might say about that. That, okay, there's lots of different things that can happen. There's lots of void space I can create so that I can make more time for myself. But when we're talking about the scripture, it has a totally different perspective on time, especially when we're talking concerning the eternal and the infinite. Here in Psalm 90, for instance, we know that our days are short. They're finite. It's a currency. It's valuable. But God's aren't. There in verses 1 through 4, it says, Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations, before the mountains were born, or you gave birth to the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn back man to dust and say, return, O children of men. That is, return to the dust, as it were. For 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it passes, or as a watch in the night. As we look through those first four verses, not only do we see God's infinite nature, his ability and character even to be from everlasting to everlasting to eternal, but we also get to see glimpses that he is beyond time. In other words, he is time's creator. And that's like the first time I started thinking about things that way, it was like, whoa. Every so often I tried to get a grasp on eternity or think about it for a second. But to think that God is its creator and is outside of that is something amazing as well. 1,000 years, and I think what he's saying there in verse 4, in the future is like yesterday to him. At time, he is beyond it. And so our days are short, but his are not. And if you look at verses 7 through 9, you and I see what people have done typically to abuse that short amount of time we've been given. He says here, we have been consumed by your anger, and by your wrath we have been dismayed. The assumption here is that he, the psalmist, Israel, has sinned. Moses also here is familiar. This is the author of the psalm, by the way, is familiar with people's sins, with their taking advantage of God's generosity. And so his wrath is against them, and because of that, they've been dismayed. And in verse 8, you have placed our iniquities before you, our secret sin in the light of your presence. For all our days have declined or shortened in your fury. We have finished our years like a sigh, like a breath or a vapor. And maybe that sounds familiar to us. Our days are short and often are typically abused. If you look at verse 10, we get to see something else about our time budget, beyond just the 168-hour work week, or, you know, I guess just normal week. If we look even to the extent of our lives, Moses here says, as for the days of our life, they contain 70 years, or if due to strength, 80 years, yet their pride is but labor and sorrow. So Moses says, if you're lucky, if you fought for everything that you could do, and you took all your vitamins, and you exercised and all this different stuff, you maybe get 80 years out of this existence. And you know what that tells me? I'm 29 now. That tells me I've got 51 years left by feet of strength. And what that also tells me, by the way that our culture typically works, is I've got 5,600 days to spend with my oldest son before he moves away, generally speaking. I've got so short of time. In fact, this here is by reason of strength, by grace of God there in verse 10. But what about that possible 30 minutes from now fatal car accident that I get in? I don't know how much time I have time is so dangerously and incredibly finite. And that brings us to verse 11. But before we read verse 11, I want to show you just really how dangerously finite time is. When I was younger, and we talked about this actually in Miller, I was in Boy Scouts, and it was some of my fondest memories was being in that group and doing the things that we had done. And I had a very close friend, my closest friend in Boy Scouts, and then actually we ended up going to school together once that was all done, and we went to college. It was just the community college in town. His name was Ted, and as we had developed our relationship together, and then we went and, you know, we were picking all the same classes as we were trying to sign up for school. And so we were in the same humanities class, which was a lot of fun. He was a lot of fun, too, as far as we'd sit in the back and we'd make fun of the teacher and we'd laugh about, you know, what's the point of humanities and all this different stuff. And as we're sitting there in the class, we'd have a good time. And I like how some of you are nodding. It's like, yeah, what is the point of humanities? And so as we were working through our history class and making fun of our teacher who reminded us of a T-Rex, we had a lot of good time together. I was working at a local grocery store at that time. While I wasn't going to school, when you talk about time budget, I was sleeping in my car so that I could make it to class in time and different things like that. I had found out at work one afternoon during the school season that he had died in his sleep. And we were both 19 years old. And he was one of my closest friends. And that humanities class becomes very different when you're sitting in the chair next to you, or rather, you're sitting in the chair next to you is empty that was once occupied by your close friend. Nobody knew what had happened. It seemed like his heart had just given up one night. We have no idea how much time we've got. Now, talking about the importance of prioritizing our time, you want to show somebody what's really important, or let's put it this way, what's not important. You put someone whose friend has died in the humanities class, and you start to realize what things really matter and what things don't. This is why Moses, one of my favorite verses in the entirety of the Bible, brings up verse 11 next. Is that you and I all become more wise if we assume that life is short, not wait for our friends to pass away. In verse 10, he says, or rather verse 11, you understand, or rather, who understands the power of your anger and your fury according to the fear that is due you? And here it is, verse 12. So teach us to number our days so that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. That school year, I learned a whole lot about what really mattered. The church that I was worshiping with had split 50-50. Everybody that I had known, it was a really small town. Brethren who had been at worship with me stopped saying hi when they came into the grocery store. It was a really hard year, and it was all punctuated, or I guess started off with the death of my friend Ted. When you start thinking about what matters most, the thing that's really going to push it to the forefront of your mind and make it matter, make it important to you, is death, your own or those around you. So we have to remember, for wisdom's sake, that our days are short. In verse 13 and on, he continues, he says, do return, O Yahweh, how long will it be? And be sorry for your servants. O satisfy us in the morning with your loving kindness, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Make us glad according to the days you have afflicted us and the years we have seen evil. Let your work appear to your servants and your majesty to their children. Let the favor of our Lord, our God, be upon us and confirm for us the work of our hands. Yes, confirm for us the work of our hands. I love that last verse especially. So notice how this is a very dark psalm until verse 12 comes. And then it shifts because the person who lives by wisdom has every reason to see hope. And so there's this pleading with God to save and protect, but then finally a plea with him to confirm the work of our hands. And so Moses is saying, we want to get to work. We want to serve you. Will you be helpful to us in this? Will you be a part of this? And so if we're going to ask the question, will God confirm the work of our hands? Then we have to ask, are our hands doing his work with the short time that we have left? Then he'll confirm it and he'll be a party to it and he's going to help you out with it. And then think about the difficulties of that time budget that we've got and how those could be alleviated. So we got to plan our time. We got to budget it wisely, spend it well, just like we would money, just like we would counsel somebody, hey, son, create a budget because you don't want to spend all your money away. Do we do the same thing with our time? That brings us to our next point. If God's going to confirm the work of our hands, our work needs to be his work. It needs to be what he wants us to do, and then our time budget is going to work out. And that brings us to James chapter 4, which I know you're well familiar with. James chapter 4, and let's start in verse 13. James chapter 4 and verse 13. So we got to plan our time. But when we plan our time, do we put his plans first? Now, I pictured this on purpose, because this is typically how it goes, right? I need my sleep, and that's how we all say it, right? So sleep goes first. And then I got to work so that I can, pay to have a place to sleep in, so work is important too. And then driving, yeah, I guess I got to do that. And, all that other stuff can get itself sorted out once I'm able to provide. I can't shop if I don't have money for that, different things. And so this is typically the way we think about it. And then, whatever time I have left is whatever I have left. And sometimes we go into the negative. Sometimes we're taking out sleep to go and finish up work stuff. And so if we're putting things in the order that life presents them to us, we're going to be behind the ball, and it's going to drive us, and we're going to be busy. But if we put him first, that's what James is talking about. And he shows us an entirely different way to budget time. Starting in verse 13 of James chapter 4, he says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city, and spend a year there, and engage in business, and make a profit. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor. Like a sigh, like Moses said. A vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away." I did this once. I had preached a lesson on this once where I had a can of Febreze up here. I won't do that to you right now because I didn't calculate how much the smell would travel. But the idea is when I sprayed that Febreze, it was a vapor and it was gone. You know what that looks like. He says our lives are just like that. It's gone and it vanishes away. He says in verse 15, instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. Do you see the way that it's put there? In fact, before we look at verse 15 again, let's keep finishing out verse 16 and 17. "But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. And that counts if I just didn't budget time for it." But look at verse 15 again. He says, instead, this is how this should work. This is how I should budget my time, is that if the Lord wills, I'll live. So let's start with that first. If God wills it, I will even survive till tomorrow. Some of you might know Tommy Peeler. I think he preaches down in Florida, and he and I had a chance to talk on a train in Atlanta, and that gets kind of to be a long story. But as we were talking about that, about different things, he was saying, okay, actually I was asking advice for some commentaries for a book from the Old Testament. And he says, yeah, when you get home, if you live that long, go ahead and pick up this commentary. And he threw it out there really quick, and I was kind of like, whoa, I've never thought about it that way. And I've started to use that lately, like make plans and, hey, if I live that long, because that's really what James is talking about here. If the Lord wills, I'm even going to survive till tomorrow. So let's start there. And then, if I survive tomorrow by his will, then I'll do this or that. But what's the this or that? What the Lord wills. What does the Lord will of me? In Thessalonians class on Sunday mornings, we've been talking about that. In chapter 4, Paul says that the Lord wills, very clearly like that, our sanctification. So our holiness. In James, back in chapter 1, you see that God wills our perfection, or maybe more accurately defined, our maturity, like our completeness, our full-grownness. And so God desires this for us. He desires us to be mature. He desires us that word there is perfect. And so if you're ever wondering what James is talking about, James is saying he wants you to be perfect. That means complete, mature, all your parts, everything that you need to be able to do God's will. He wants us, in James chapter 1 also, to be wise. And we just keep going all night long about this, what God wills for us in very specific terms. If the Lord wills, I'm even going to live and do this or that. Here's the question, though. We covered up the time budget with this. And you're wondering, maybe, can I fit that in to this? Well, yeah, if we switch it around backwards. If we start off by saying, if the Lord wills, we will do this or that. And then everything else can feed this. So what we can start doing then is, yeah, you still have to travel to work. Yeah, you still have to sleep. God made you that way. Yeah, certain things have to happen. Yeah, if you have a family, you need to spend time with them. That's scripturally obligated. And there's a whole bunch of different things as well. But we can use those things for the Lord's will and take full advantage of every second that we've got that he's bestowed upon us very graciously. In an idea of this, let's go over to Matthew chapter 6 and verses 31 through 34. Matthew chapter 6. And again, this is a passage you're probably familiar with as well. Matthew chapter 6, and we'll start in verse 31. He says here, do not worry then, saying, what will we eat? Or what will we drink? Or, you know, or he also says, what will we wear for clothing? You could even maybe assume as well, how am I going to get this done with my time budget? How am I going to accomplish these things that you want from me? In verse 31, he says, do not worry then, saying, what will we eat, what will we drink, and so on. Verse 32, for the Gentiles eagerly seek all these things, and brethren, every single other person that's in that commute with you is seeking the same stuff. These Gentiles eagerly seek these things, for your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble on its own. And isn't that the truth? When we look at our time budget and those 168 hours, let's not borrow them from tomorrow, like we'll sometimes say. Let's live with what's now, and let's seek the kingdom first with the time that we've got. Now, here's something that's very interesting. We see worry here. The Greek word is merimnao, which is defined as to be worried or to be anxious. The origin of that word comes from a differing of two ideas or opinions. And so, very literally, Jesus is saying here, as you go back up to verse 24, no one can serve two masters, and worry is a direct consequence of serving two masters. And that's built into the definition of the word as well. And so if you and I are worried about where our time's getting spent and different things like that, we're not serving one king. We're not seeking first one thing. And so if the Lord wills, we'll do this or that. Seeking first, then, means seeking only. And all the rest of our time budget fits into this. So what does the Lord will? We've talked about that. To seek first his kingdom, his righteousness. Seek those things first and let all the rest of the budget fill in. Okay, that brings us to our last point. We need to take this time and use it well or pursue it. So in front of you, you've got a little card that we passed down. Take a look at those for just a second. What you should see there is across the top, you've got days. On the left-hand side, you've got morning to night. And I figure everybody's got to plan differently about, you know, when you go to sleep and when you wake up. And your plan might be different from the person's next to you. But you've got a whole bunch of blocks of time, if God lets us live that long, to be able to fill in with all sorts of different stuff. And so this is yours, then, to put on your refrigerator or on the dashboard of your car or on your computer screen or different things like that, to be able to look at your time budget and have a very tangible, you know, view of how limited your days are, so that we can use that time and gain some wisdom. Now, planning is one thing. I like to plan. I like to do this all the time. I'm not as good as follow through. And so that brings us to our last point, which is to pursue our plans. If we're going to seek first his kingdom, we need some tangible ways of how to get that done, and then we just got to do it. So that brings us to Ephesians chapter 5, and starting in verse 15. And as we pursue the time that we have left, I just want to drop a few ideas on you here. There's probably a lot of ways that this could go, a lot of directions this could take. But let's start with this. As you're looking at your little card and you're planning that out, if you want to make one bigger, that's fine. It doesn't hurt my feelings. In fact, it's better. The time and the days are evil. Here in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15, he says, therefore be careful how you walk. And the idea there is be careful how you live. And we could even interject here as well, be careful how you use your time. Not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. What a weird thing to say. We'll talk about that in a second. So then, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. What is God's will for my life and yours? And on he goes to give not just some suggestions, but actual tangible ways to get this done. So, barring reading the rest of the scripture right now, let's talk about some principles, and then you can do the rest as you're planning your time out, is that the days are evil. And what I think this means is that time is constantly trudging on to its end. Or in other words, time is completely against us in the plans that you and I would typically like to make. If we had all the time in the world, if we had eternity to pursue our hobbies and different things like that, we might become masters of those things. But time is against our intentions. And if they are evil like that, it's a mistake to think that we've got time on our side. And here's what this looks like. I was talking with a brother a long time ago about something that had happened between himself and another brother, and it seemed to be that this first brother was having a problem. Maybe he was wrong, it wasn't really clear, but he was having a problem forgiving the first brother. And I was saying, I was bringing him the scriptures talking about that, and I was mentioning from Colossians where it says we need to be forgiving like Christ was forgiving for us, and certainly he didn't do something that was so terrible that we couldn't forgive him, could we? And as we were talking through that, he refused to forgive, but rather said it this way, you just got to give me time. time heals all wounds, is what we're told. That's a lie. Time does not heal all wounds. It's evil. And it drags us out until we'll never forgive our brother. That's why Jesus said back in Matthew, right before where we just read, if we've got a problem with each other, we go figure that out right now on the way to the courts. Because time is our enemy. It's evil. It's against us. It's an adversary. I've got a quote here from George Wald. He's a Nobel Prize winner, I think in the 1960s. He's also an evolutionist, and his evolutionism's take on time is interesting. I thought this was an interesting quote to bring up for you. He says, however improbable we regard this event, he's talking about the Big Bang, it will almost certainly happen at least once. The time is of the order of 2 billion years. Given so much time, the impossible becomes possible, the possible probable, and the probable virtually certain. One only has to wait. Time itself performs the miracles. It's not how it works. Time is against us. Time does not perform miracles. It takes and it crushes and it wears down everything in its path. I thought of something else, too, if you're thinking about how much time we've got. And if you say, like, hey, I want to go and take advantage of this because I got time. I was thinking about, you know, America's favorite pastime now, YouTube, which is uploaded every minute. Every minute. 300 hours worth of video every minute. It's a weird sort of time continuum problem that we've got there. But if you think about that for a second, if we've been doing that and not taking into account like exponential growth and different things, if it's been 300 hours per minute for the 12 years that YouTube has been in existence, and I had to write this down because it's too big a number, that's 1,918,440 years worth of video on YouTube. 1,900,000 years worth of video. If I think, you know, hey, I'm going to go on YouTube for a second, it won't matter, it won't be a big deal. That's a time sink, I'll tell you what. Use every minute well, is what Paul's telling us here. And there's a lot of things that distract from that. So, if we're going to use our time well, because the days are evil, we need to be wise. And that's just, that's a big term. Like, what are we talking about with this? How can we keep track of this? Well, take a look at your card again. I've got a little question for you at the top. And the question is, what do you value most? What's most important to you? Think of it this way. What's more important to you than life or time itself? What could answer that possibly? What contributes to your eternity as you start to fill in the little boxes that are there? What stores up for yourself treasures in heaven? When we go to the end of our days, whenever that is, however long God gives us, will we regret the things that we spent time on as we stand before the Ancient of Days? When we look at our time budget, like we had earlier on, our little blocks of time that we kind of portion out, can we think of ways to multi-purpose our time? Can we be wise with how we spend our commutes? That's 7 hours a week of potentially quiet time, unless, you know, I want to turn on the radio and kind of drown out things or, you know, have a laugh about something, listen to my comedian. That's a lot of time I could spend thinking about something else, a lot of time I could spend praying. We can pray while we drive. We can use our family time, recreation time, to teach, to bring up our children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, to show them the wonders of creation, that God is its creator. Another thing we can think of as we're being wise is, in front of you, you've probably got your phones. Is our technology helping us? It can. It can help with time, but it can also really hurt. When you get a chance, I'd like you to go, if you've got an iPhone, go to settings and go to screen time. And horrify yourself with what you find there, how much time we use with our phones open, and what we're doing with it. It'll tell us. Is there a way that we can be more wise with our time? Can we recreate, go to recreation, and use that time with God as opposed to away from Him? There's lots of things that we can do to be wise. And the specifics of that I can't really get into because you're going to know better than me about what shape your life takes. But the thing most of all to keep in mind is that we need to understand God's will. We're going to sing here in just a second. Take time to be holy. And as far as like a detailed, specific instruction of how to live life, this song is fantastic. And so I hope you look at each of the words and use this to try and plan out those little blocks of time that are on that paper in front of you. And you'll see things. That's an older song. You'll see how relevant it is and that the rest of the world rushes on. But you and I need to take time to be holy. You know, I can't make any time. So we've got to take something from our budget. We've got to give up things that maybe we want because something else is much, much more important. And what you'll do then, brethren, at that point, is you'll be glad, and I can guarantee this,
you'll be glad that you prioritized time to spend with God, to learn from Him, to speak with Him, to order your life around Him, and to see other people find joy and hope when this temporal life gives us so little. Time is finite, and time is against us. Understand God's will. There's another riddle I found. If you've read The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit, you're probably familiar with this. This comes from Riddles in the Dark. And the riddle is, this thing all things devours, birds, beasts, trees, flowers, gnaws iron, bites steel, grinds hard bones to meal, slays kings, ruins towns, and beats mountains down. What is it? It's time. And if it'll do that to those, it'll do it to us too, unless you and I give our time to God, the Eternal One. Let's spend our week then, and the rest of our lives, thinking about ways to work down from what we value most to how we live, to take every opportunity of the things that come up in our lives to be able to use them for God's glory, whether or not it seems like that might be, you know, you might think, well, do I need to be praying right now? Well, there's lots of ways that we can use our time for His service. Let's be creative and use the Scriptures as our guide. If you need anything at all, if you have spiritual needs, if I hope you've been convinced of the short nature of your life and you would like to do something about that, if you'd like to give your life to Christ so that you might have one eternal with Him, let us know. As we stand and sing a song together, take time to be holy.